See, the Apostle Paul says that Satan would be working energetically even after the Lord returns. But you can't necessarily blame all the trouble on that, because the trouble increasing is also scripturally linked to Jesus and to God. In Daniel 12:1, we find that when Michael, our Lord, stands up, we'd have a time of trouble such as never was. In Haggai 2:6, we learn that God is going to shake everything, cause a commotion. In Revelation 20, we see that one of the first works of the returned Lord was to bind Satan, and we're already 100 years into the millennial age. So you would wonder, if it's all future, why, with so much time having been elapsed? So we think the all future argument leaves much unanswered. The second argument is that the binding of Satan is all in the past. And normally this argument says the personal devil was bound when the Lord returned. But the evil angels are causing the trouble now. This is a sort of finalism, as one brother called it, in that something happens rather suddenly. Nevertheless, there is an element of truth in this view. After all, Revelation 20 did say that the binding of Satan is one of the first works of the returned Lord. And Jude 6 does inform us that at this time the evil spirits would be released. This view that the total binding of Satan was in the past was held by Brother Benjamin Barton. And he wrote, Brother Russell, a letter concerning it, and it's published in the reprints on 4695 under the title, This Looks Reasonable. It's Brother Russell's title. And then the letter is Brother Barton's. And Brother Barton's answer is answering an article which Brother Russell had wrote on 4609. Even though Brother Russell said this looks reasonable, he never embraced it. In 1916, he still held the same view that he held at the beginning of his ministry. Nevertheless, Brother Russell was generous enough to allow those brethren who wanted to see it that way to see it that way. We think it does have a great weakness in it scripturally, though, in that 2 Thessalonians 2:9 says that Satan would be energetically working during the presence of the Lord and not be bound. So we believe that is perhaps the greatest inherent weakness in the all-past view. The third view, Satan's binding began in the past and will be completed in the future. It is this concept that we will discuss for the remaining of our period, because we believe that this answers all of the elements that come into question, and we believe this is in harmony with all the scriptures on the subject. On top of that, it has the advantage of being Brother Russell's consistent viewpoint. Before we go further, why consider this question? Is it really terribly important to know whether Satan was bound in the past, will be in the future, or is presently being bound? Does this question have any effect on other matters? We'd like to mention four things that it has an effect on. Number one, if Satan is already bound, the primary adversary of the church has been removed. The world, the flesh, and the devil were to be the testers of the church, primarily the adversary. If he has been removed, our testing is under different conditions than has been the church up to this point. But Genesis 3:15 says that the heel members, the last members of the church, would be bruised by the serpent. Second point, we know that the great company will be delivered after the church is delivered. And Paul says the great company is turned over to Satan for the destruction of their flesh. As a matter of fact, in the type, the scapegoat which represented the great company is called a goat for Azazel, a goat for Satan. The third point, we believe that we are involving direct contradictions to scriptures. The 2 Thessalonians 2:9, which points out, as we've mentioned, that Satan would be especially active during the second advent. And another instance, Matthew 7, 22 and 23, where we read, "Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works?' Then will I profess unto them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity.'" In these last days, many will be saying, "Lord, Lord," and working great miracles in his name. He says they are working iniquity, and that they did not do it in his power. In whose power did they do it? Satan's. And the fourth point, we believe that the other conclusions, those which do not show a gradual binding of Satan, are different from Brother Russell's. Not that we do not have that liberty, but it's a terribly dangerous sign when we have to say, "Brother Russell said, but I see this way instead." One question that seems to disturb some minds in relation to the question of Satan's binding is the question of dominion. Who's king? Some will say, you can't have two rulers at once. Others might say, Christ is stronger than Satan, so he wouldn't have any trouble binding him. Or others might say, this is no longer the present evil world, so Satan isn't king of it, therefore he's bound. If we say we can't have two rulers at once, our view is not broad enough, because we can have two rulers at once if they're at war with each other. If we say Christ is stronger than Satan, therefore he could bind him immediately, that's true. But so is God stronger than Satan. But in wisdom, he permitted Satan to act for 6,000 years. So the argument is void. The Lord could have bound Satan immediately, but it was not expedient to do so and not in harmony with his plan. If we say this is no longer the present evil world, therefore Satan is no longer its king and he's bound, we could just as rightly say this is also not the new heavens and the new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness, which would make us come to the conclusion that Christ is not king, which would also be a false conclusion. We must realize that we are in a period of transition, and our interpretations must take this into account. First of all, what was Satan the ruler of? There are two words for world in the New Testament, aeon, which means age, and cosmos, which means order of things. We could technically argue that the old age is past. This word aeon, in relationship to Satan's power, is used three places. It's used more than that, but I'm using three places as examples. First, 2 Corinthians 4:4, where he is called the God of this world, meaning age. Secondly, in Galatians 1:4, where Paul refers to this present evil world, aeon, age. Ephesians 6:2, where he refers to Satan and his followers as the rulers of darkness of this world, aeon, or age. As we said, some might say technically the age is over. But we cannot deny that the order of things is still corrupt. So even if we were to say the age is past over which Satan had dominion, we could not say the order of things has passed over which Satan has had dominion. It is still corrupt. It is referred to in scriptures as the cosmos. Matthew 4, 8, and 9. The devil offers to the Lord the kingdoms of this world, cosmos, this order of things. John 12, 31. The prince of this world, cosmos, be cast out. Notice, Satan is called the prince of this order of things. He still has some dominion as long as this order of things is here. John 14, 30, the prince of this cosmos cometh. John 16, 11, the prince of this cosmos is judged. John 18, 30, my kingdom is not of this cosmos. Ephesians 2:2, the course of this world according to the prince of the power of the air. And there again is cosmos. The course of this world of things is worked according to the will of Satan, who is the prince of the power of the air. 1 John 5:19, diaglot, the whole world, cosmos, order of things, lieth under the evil one. So we can see in scriptures that we cannot too readily pass off Satan as having his dominion totally taken away, because according to the scriptures, his dominion is the present evil order of things, whether or not a legal lease has been ended. Therefore, Satan's dominion is still visibly the dominant one. Our Lord's is not. Our Lord's is actually the dominant one, but visibly Satan's is still the dominant dominion. We must acknowledge steps in God's plan. As Brother Russell said in the foreword to the third volume, Messiah's kingdom has various stages of inauguration. We have a slow transition of dominion. Let us examine some texts showing the exchange of dominion from the old order to the new. Revelation 11, in the 15th verse, we have the statement, the kingdom of this world is become the kingdom of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. Official dominion transfer. But the context shows what happens. The nations were angry. See, when our Lord gets the dominion, we're supposed to have angry nations. But is Christ's dominion not supposed to be peace? Let us examine a few other texts. Psalm 72 and verse 8. He shall have dominion also from sea to sea, and from the river unto the ends of the earth. Now the Revelation text showed us the beginning of his dominion. It's not complete. Psalm 72:8 shows us that his dominion would expand until it would cover the entire earth. Zechariah 9:10 tells us very much the same thing. I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall speak peace unto the heathen, and his dominion shall be from sea even to sea, and from the river unto the ends of the earth. We see that our Lord's dominion expands gradually. In this verse, our Lord's dominion is peaceful, isn't it? He shall speak peace to the heathen. Yet in the first place, Revelation 11, his dominion was not peaceable. It was warlike. So the exchange and transfer of dominion is scripturally a gradual thing. Daniel, the 7th chapter, verses 26 and 7. The judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. Here again, Satan's old order is taken away, and it's given to the Lord. But it's gradual. It's taken away to consume and to destroy it unto the end. Slowly. Micah 4:8. And thou, O tower of the flock, the stronghold of the daughter of Zion, unto thee shall it come, even the first dominion. The first dominion, rulership over a perfect earth. Now that has not come to our Lord in the fullest sense. And yet it is to be his. So we see the expansion of dominion a little bit at a time. Psalm 49, verse 14. Like sheep, they are laid in the grave. Death shall feed on them, and the upright shall have dominion over them in the morning. You remember, the saints have part in this dominion, and here it is referring to their part. And their dominion will expand until it includes the resurrection of the dead, according to Psalm 49:14. From these texts, we must see one conclusion. The exchange of dominion is gradual. It involves the change of the prime ruler. It involves the change of the governors under him. It involves the change of the laws. And it involves the obedience of the subjects. Satan, of course, is the prime ruler of the old order. He does not give up without a fight. And this is manifest from the text in 2 Thessalonians, which we would now like to read, which we think is the key to the entire subject under discussion. 2 Thessalonians 2:9. I'm going to read it according to a more accurate translation. The whose with which the verse will begin is referring to our Lord, so I will just supply his name for it. Christ's presence is accompanied by the energetic operation of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. It says, Christ's presence is accompanied by the energetic operation of Satan. The Greek word is very explicit. It's not even a just a strained operation of Satan. It is the energetic operation of Satan with all power. That's interesting, isn't it? All power. Now, it doesn't mean all power in heaven and earth, because that belongs to our Lord. But all power that is at his command, and signs and lying wonders. It does demonstrate one fact: Satan has power. He is not bound during the parousia of the Lord, at least not completely. So, commenting on this text in the second volume, page 359, Brother Russell has these words. We understand these words to imply that in the time of the Lord's presence, the present time since 1874, through this Antichrist system, one of the principal of Satan's agencies for deceiving and controlling the world, as well as through all his other agencies, the devil will make a most desperate resistance to the new order of things about to be established. He will take advantage of every little circumstance and all the inherited weaknesses and selfishness of the human family to enlist their hearts and hands and pens in this final struggle against liberty and the full elucidation of truth. And the apostle's assurance seems to be that in this final death struggle of Antichrist, notwithstanding he shall seem to gain increased power in the world by new stratagems, deceptions, and combinations, yet the true Lord of earth will prevail and shall finally, during the great time of trouble, utterly annihilate Antichrist and destroy forever his power and deceptions, unquote. We use this quote as an example because we find that Brother Russell inseparably links Satan's deceptions with the existence of Antichrist. That's an important point. Brother Russell is saying that as long as Satan exists, Antichrist exists. As long as Antichrist exists, Satan still has power. This brings him to write these words in 1916, the Question Book, Chicago edition, page 626. The collapse of Babylon will indicate that Satan has been quite fully bound. He is working very hard with ecclesiastical systems and false doctrines. Their collapse will mean his binding, unquote. Now that's what we need. We need a sign. And here's the sign. A sign of the collapse of a dominion. The sign is when Antichrist is thrown down into the sea like a millstone, Satan is bound. There's our sign. You know, there's always a sign of the change of dominion. In AD 70, the temple was destroyed, and that showed the collapse of the Jewish dominion. In the Second World War, Berlin was invaded, and that showed the collapse of Hitler's dominion. In 1917, we had the Balfour Declaration, and that showed the collapse of the Sultan's big foot on Palestine. And the fall of Babylon, that's the sign of the end of Satan's dominion, when he has been fully bound and no longer can exercise any power whatsoever. Now let's look at some scriptures on the subject. First of all, Revelation 20. The first three verses. I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him. The next three words are doubtful. They may be spurious. And cast him into the bottomless pit, and shut him up, and set a seal upon him, that he should deceive the nations no more, till the 1,000 years should be fulfilled, and after that he must be loosed a little season. This angel coming down is our Lord. And he has the key to the bottomless pit. We must first know what the pit is. The pit is a symbol of absolute powerlessness. Absolute powerlessness. The pit condition. The fallen angels, when they were bound, according to Jude 6, after the flood, were not cast in a pit, were they? They were never absolutely powerless. They were restrained under darkness, but not in a pit. You see, they had certain restraints put upon them. Specific restraint, but not total restraint. Now, Satan has a chain put around him here in this verse. But the fallen angels also had a chain. But you see, there's a big difference between the binding of Satan and the binding of the fallen angels. The chain isn't enough for Satan, because in Satan's case, we want total restraint, not partial. This brings up a question. Who is it that is bound here? We know that Revelation is a symbolic book, and it names many names: dragon, serpent, devil, Satan. And the question often is asked, maybe it's just the personal devil, maybe it's something else. Reprint 4609, Brother Russell says that Satan in this chapter includes more than the personal devil, but it does not exclude him. So we're talking not only about the personal devil, but his visible manifestations, such as Antichrist, that are being bound. So Satan is being bound with a chain. He's not yet in the pit. So now we can see how this gradual binding starts to take place. It starts with a chain, but that's not the end. We have steps in this binding process. The binding includes the personal devil, the scope of his influence, and his visible representations. All three things. Nevertheless, this chain around him, remember, is only a restraint. It is not total binding. And this is how we can harmonize 2 Thessalonians 2:9. All the power at his command he is still going to be using. The chain is restraining, but he is not powerless. The chain is truth. And truth is crippling Satan's agencies terribly. But Satan never let truth get in the way. He usually finds some devious way around it. So he has to be bound further. And the steps in this total binding are listed in this chapter we've read. 1, lay hold on. 2, bind. 3, cast. 4, shut up. And 5, seal. It's going to be a total job. Maybe one problem when we talk about the binding of Satan is we only use that one word, bind. That was only the second in the step, in the 5 steps listed. And when we use the word bind, we're talking about the whole operation, including all 5 steps. So sometimes our terminology is inadequate. When all 5 steps are completed, then Satan will be powerless in the pit. Then he will be fully bound, as we use the terminology. Then he can deceive the nations no more. Now that's an interesting part of these three verses. The whole reason for his binding is so that he cannot deceive the nations. The nations are still deceived. There is no question about it. The nations are still deceived. Now, their eyes are being opened to some deceptions, but they are deceived. If they weren't deceived, they'd accept the Lord. Individuals are still being judged by Satan's order and standards. It is still those who are corrupt that prosper. It's the old order. It's not the new. When the judgments of the Lord are abroad in the earth, the inhabitants thereof will learn righteousness. Isaiah 26:9. Satan is still influencing the judgment of individuals. He is not fully bound. The procedure of binding, however, has begun. Sometimes we have discussions over whether it's the personal devil or his influence that are bound, and we really think that the arguments are fruitless. First of all, the prophecies must refer to him and his influence. His influence is his active deception, is it not? And it cannot be perpetrated without him, not even by the fallen angels, because the prophecies are about the binding of Satan, not about the binding of the fallen angels. As a matter of fact, the prophecies say the fallen angels are being loosed. So the prophecies referring to the binding of Satan refer both to his influence and his person. And the things being perpetrated, which might be satanic otherwise through the fallen angels, are not being bound. Scripturally, they're being loosed. The opposite. With that much information, we believe we can conclude that Revelation 20, 1 through 3, spans the time from 1874 until the complete collapse of Babylon, which is yet future. Now let's look at the Lord's parables on the binding of Satan. Matthew 12. How can one enter into a strong man's house and spoil his goods except he first bind the strong man, and then he will spoil his house? And we will compare the Mark account with that, Mark 3:27. No man can enter into a strong man's house and spoil his goods except he will first bind the strong man, and then he will spoil his house. The first point we have to mention about these two records of this parable is what they do not say. We read rather on the surface at times, how can one enter into a strong man's house and spoil his goods except he first bind the strong man? The parable is not about entering the strong man's house. Repeat, the parable is not about entering the strong man's house. Now the strong man is in the house, isn't he? How can you bind him unless you first enter his house? Well, the parable seems to say the opposite. How can you enter his house unless you first bind him? And this is the point. The parable is not about entering the house. The parable is about spoiling his goods. That's another important point. The word spoil does not mean destroy. It does not mean corrupt. It means take over. It's the same thing as the worldly expression, to the victor belong the spoils. In other words, our Lord's parable is saying this: how can I go in and take over the good things I want that are under Satan's control unless I first bind him? In Revelation 20, we read that the Lord comes in with the chain and then binds the strong man. This is one evidence that the entering does come before the binding, so that in this parable, the Lord binds him after he's entered his house, despite the surface reading which might sound to the contrary. In Psalm 149, 8, we see that the saints are permitted to participate in the binding influence which this chain of light exercises. To bind their kings with chains and their nobles with fetters of iron. After the binding is complete, the Lord will be able to take the spoils. Now let's get this picture. The Lord came, and there's the man in his house. And in it are the things he wants. What does he want? He wants the human race. That's the whole valuable thing that he came after. But the human race is under the power of Satan. Before the Lord can take over the human race, he must bind this strong man. We just saw this in Revelation 20. He enters and he binds him. He not only binds him, but he throws him in the pit. Then he can spoil his goods, meaning then he can take over the human race to bless them. Notice some texts. Isaiah 53:12. Therefore I will divide him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong. Our Lord here is pictured as having some kind of spoil. It's the human race. He's going to divide them with his church so that they can be blessed by them. He shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he hath poured out his soul unto death. Isaiah 9:2-6 in Leser. This entire context is about the time after Satan is fully bound, and when the spoils, mankind, are divided for their blessing amongst the Lord and the church. The people that walk in darkness have seen a great light. They that dwell in the land of the shadow of death, a light shineth brightly over them. Thou hast multiplied the nation, made great their joy. They rejoice before thee as with the joy in harvest, as men are glad when they divide the spoil. Now here's the reason. For the yoke of their burden and the staff on their shoulder, the rod of their oppressor, hast thou broken. See, Satan's in the pit. This is why they're glad. For all the weapons of the fighter in the battle's tumult and the garment rolled in blood shall be burnt, become food for fire. For a child is born unto us, a son hath been given unto us, and the government is placed upon his shoulders. This shows that this is the time when the Lord is exercising full dominion in the earth. We have the same account in Luke 11. When a strong man armed keepeth his palace, his goods are in peace. But when a stronger than he shall come upon him and overcome him, he shall take from him all his armor wherein he trusted, and divideth his spoils. If Satan's goods were in peace, That would mean that the binding had not begun. But since his goods are in trouble, that's a sign that the binding has begun. And the Lord is stronger. He has no trouble binding Satan, but notice what he does. He first takes his armor. What's Satan's armor? Error. Darkness. So the Lord takes a chain of light to bind him. And then he spoils his house. That is, he takes over the good things of Satan's house, the world of mankind. Well, there was a lot other on this subject that we'll just have to forget about it at this point. The point to remember is this. The binding of Satan is in order to free men from his deceptions. The Lord has been freeing men of the deceptions of Satan gradually since 1874. The last step in freeing men from the most obvious deception of Satan is when he will take the Antichrist system and cast it in the sea with great violence, and men will no longer be deceived. The binding of Satan has taken 100 years already. He is still not in the pit or powerless condition. But we know the sign of the time that he will be, and we trust it's not too far in the future, if the Lord had his blessing.